first episode of the Film Stage podcast. I'm Jordan Rout.
And I'm John Lucchetti.
And John and I are back this week. We're going to discuss Splice and Condemned to the Greek.
Yeah, we are.
Yes, we are. And we didn't see Killers or Marmaduke. Those were the other. It was kind of a big release for four kind of mediocre, early hyped movies, I would say.
Marmaduke, the event movie of the summer.
Yes. Killers on Marmaduke kind of got the expected bad reviews, and I was actually surprised at both the reviews for Splice and Get Him to the Greek. We'll talk about what we felt about the films, but I was surprised.
Yeah, Ebert gave Splice 3 stars. They just need to retire him at this point. Yeah. I love him, but...
Yeah, and box office-wise, Get Him to the Greek was the surprise kind of out of all of them, so that was cool. All right, well, let's move on to news stories. If this is your first time listening to the Film Stage podcast, this is a weekly podcast where we just discuss news and then jump into some in-depth reviews on the week's releases. So, first news story came out last night. Now, this is a rumor. This is completely a rumor. There's no hard facts to this. But Indiana Jones 5, there was a source for the site called Music Rooms that said that Indiana Jones 5 will start shooting next year, and the plot will be centered around the Bermuda Triangle. Steven Spielberg and George Lucas are almost done with the script. Harrison Ford is ready to come back. And the quote was, "It will be an emotional and exciting conclusion to the franchise, with Indy facing his biggest challenge yet, Shia LaBeouf will return as a central role." They said that they're going to make it the old-fashioned way, rather than with CG. With the huge CG, which was people's biggest complaint of the last movie. Now, what did you think of Indiana Jones 4? Did it ruin the franchise for you?
It didn't ruin it, but in case you can't really see this right now, but I'm rolling my eyes at all of this. I just leave well enough alone. I can't imagine this being any better than the last one, especially how much they kind of did botch the last one. But if they're going to try and take it back to... they always say they're going to take it back to their roots after they fuck up. And anytime they try and do that, like, a great example would be, like, Alien Resurrection, taking it back to its roots after the third one. That was even worse than the third one. So, you know, good luck, guys. Good luck.
Yeah, I mean when the movie came out, I mean, if you look, it's actually around, like, high 70% on... like, 77% around Tomatoes. So, like, the kind of the hatred for it, if you will, among the, like, kind of diehard community came a little after. And, it made $800 million worldwide.
It's not terrible. It's just unnecessary.
I had a lot of fun. I actually had a lot of fun with the last one. I don't really ever want to rewatch it, but I had fun, and I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, Spielberg. I watched Spielberg coming up. He has War Horse, which is kind of this war drama. Then he has Tintin, Adventures of Tintin, which is kind of this, back to, like, his huge blockbuster roots, I guess you would say.
I'm more interested in seeing what Spielberg's next, you know, big drama is going to be, you know, because I think that's kind of what he does better most of the time.
He had a really cool sci-fi movie called Interstellar that he was developing, but I hope he would rather choose that than this, but, yeah. I understand this, I kind of has that built-in fan base.
And I really take issue with this. I mean, how old is Harrison Ford at this point, and they just keep trotting him out for these films when...
He'll be, I think, in... Because there was a rumor it was going to come out in 2011. I think he would have been 69 then. So, I mean, obviously, I think this is another year away even that. But so, 70-year-old.
You know, go get it, I guess. But it's just, you know, the diehard Alien fan in me is bitter that he's allowed to trek his carcass out for these films. But Sigourney Weaver, who's a good 10 years younger, you know, is not eligible.
Well, he has recently been cast in Jon Favreau's Cowboys and Aliens. He's going to play kind of the badass of the town. And that's a huge sci-fi. I mean, a huge sci-fi action blockbuster as well. So
yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. That'll be interesting. We'll definitely keep you updated on any indie happenings. And next news story. This is kind of a small news story that didn't really make a lot of buzz. But Thomas Alfredson, who did one of the best movies I thought of 2008, Let the Right One In. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out before the Matt Reeves remake comes this October. Let Me In. But his next movie has been announced. It's Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Tinker, Tailor, Soldiers, and Spies, oh my.
Yes. And,
I couldn't help that, I'm sorry.
And, Gary Oldman, who, most recently was in The Book of Eli, will be playing the lead. And it's kind of a, Cold War thriller. They said in, he's gonna play kind of a ordinary anti-James Bond type. So, I don't know if it's like that, The Right One In is kind of a mellow, I would think, a mellow take on kind of the Cold War thriller. Probably the most interesting news is that Peter Morgan, who is, you know, an Oscar-nominated, I don't know if he won, but Oscar-nominated screenwriter, he did The Queen and Frost Nixon. Yeah, but he was actually tapped to write the Bond film and then dropped out the next Bond film. And now he is actually, he's written the script for this. So
I really like these sort of movies that kind of come up along the periphery of the Bond series. Like, do you remember The Matador from about 5 years
yes,
ago?
Yes, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, which is like kind of this offshoot that they did, you know. I mean, it's like the anti-Bond in another way. So I'm actually really intrigued to see how they kind of play this out. It could be really great. And Gary Oldman, you know, it's always great to have him around, so.
Yes, definitely. And speaking of, which will actually follow us into our next news story, Michael Fassbender is in talks to join the cast.
That'd be awesome.
And so, let's just jump right in. Why not? I mean, we're all looking forward to it, I think.
Yeah.
Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy.
Yes.
And I think it might get a name change, but we'll see.
No. Yeah, that'd be interesting to see how that name sticks around.
Yes. But, okay, so Michael Fassbender, he was in Steve McQueen's Hunger, which... incredible movie. Just came out in Criterion Edition. And as of today, it's streaming on Netflix Watching, so you can check it out there. And then since he's done Inglourious Bastards, he was in the barroom scene, if
right.
you remember. And then he was in Fish Tank, which I saw at Toronto Film Festival, an excellent movie from Andrea Arnold. And now he's kind of getting into a little more blockbuster. I mean, he had Centurion, which is kind of a pre-blockbuster Neil Marshall directed kind of epic. And then he is in Jonah Hex this month. Kind of a bad choice, but we haven't seen him, so we can't don't blame. But based on the trailer and his small part in the trailer,
yeah.
It looks a little ridiculous.
Definitely.
And now, and now he is actually looking at.
He's faced with the greatest choice a thespian could have. I mean,
which reboot will he take on?
Exactly.
Now, the choice is between playing young Magneto, who Ian McKellen was the old Magneto, and then Matthew Vaughn's X-Men First Class. Or he can play the villain, who we do not know who will be in Mark Webb's Spider-Man reboot. So yes,
a win-win situation, really. No, I think the X-Men option sounds a little more interesting. I think Magneto is a pretty rich character that a lot could be done with. I don't really have a lot of faith in First Class to be, you know, as high quality as something like X2 was.
Yeah.
And also, isn't Magneto supposed to be Jewish? I don't believe Michael Fassbender is, and maybe I'm just nitpicking.
Eric Lenscher. I mean, it sounds kind of Jewish. That's his.
Well,
his
yeah. Family. Well, yeah. Magneto's history is that he was
yeah,
in a concentration camp.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm kind of intrigued to see that. I mean, maybe I'm probably just nitpicking. I guess it's not.
It's going to ruin the movie for you.
It is. I mean, you know me. Can't they get a? She's out of my league. That guy.
Oh, Jay Baruchel.
Yeah. Can't he play the young Magneto?
It would be kind. It'd be kind of. Funny movie with him and Aaron Johnson. I don't think they're going to go that route, but it was funny because before these two movies, Spider-Man and X-Men, I had probably zero interest, and then they announced the directors, and
right.
Mark Webb, I mean, I thought he did a great job with Femme It Is This Summer, and Matthew Vaughn, of course, we talked about him before.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that Michael Fassbender is kind of choosing kind of these blockbusters, but he's also doing Jane Eyre, who Cary Fukunaga, who did Sin Nombre last year, is doing, and he's also in Steven Soderbergh's Knockout, which is supposed to be good.
And a Dangerous Method.
Cronenberg.
Right,
yeah. So, I mean, if he chooses one of these, I feel like he has those three other movies to kind of keep his cred up, I guess.
Yeah, you gotta make the money, you know,
yeah.
So go for it, just, you know, and like I said, these two superhero movies have potential. Whether or not they'll live up to that potential, we don't know, but,
right.
You know, it could be a lot worse.
Right,
it could
right.
be like The Punisher.
Exactly. we wouldn't want to go there. I mean, he did start out his career in 300. I mean, his U.S. career in 300. He was
that's true. So.
Yeah, well, we'll keep you updated definitely on those stories. So let's move on. Now we have four stories coming up that all kind of relate to each other. Now,
yes.
I mean, Hollywood has been known kind of to do some video game adaptations, and they always haven't
they
turned
like
out
to do
well.
Them every now and again.
Every now and again. And Prince of Persia, we talked about last week, and that
mm-hmm.
was kind of a failure. And now there's kind of four more up on the table. One that we've already heard about is Tomb Raider. Now, they're after Angelina Jolie, which I never saw the second one, Cradle of Life, but I did see the first one. Wasn't
right.
Bad. But
they weren't great films, but, I mean, really, she was the perfect person for that role. I mean,
yeah.
I remember long before the movies even went into production, like, around the time Girl Interrupted happened, she was already being buzzed about, you know, to take on that role.
Hmm.
And I'm kind of surprised that she's suddenly too old for that role.
Yeah, or maybe she just doesn't want to do it.
I could
see that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so they're going to reboot, why not, Tomb Raider on 3D. And guess who's rumored? Kim Kardashian.
fine.
Yeah, this is the. I've only seen her sex tape. I don't think I've seen anything.
And if you saw that, you would know she's a fine actress. I mean, don't judge her.
I won't. No, but I mean, she's kind of that class of, you know, Paris Hilton actresses
who I think was robbed of an Oscar in House of Wax. I know, greatest death scene of all time.
That's true. In this rumored story, they said that Allure she would play would be more of a comic strip version of the character. So I guess kind of not as... Because, I mean, the first were kind of serious. You know, they didn't they tried to take themselves a little seriously.
Yeah, they did take themselves a little too seriously. And maybe that's one of the reasons why...
But for news like this, I'm like, why not? I mean, she's kind of hot. So, like, just go for it. Like, you know, it's like, whatever.
I'm not one to judge, but I mean, I feel like... Her body does not lend itself to being a Tomb Raider very much.
That's true. She has junk in the trunk.
I mean, she could not slip through a tight squeeze.
That's true.
Which, you know, is great. I mean, like you said, she is pretty attractive. So
yes.
And speaking of attractive women,
yes, another rumor from Joe Blow, who reported both of these, the website Joe Blow, they are reporting. Now this is strictly a rumor again that Uwebo, whatever. Yeah, I don't think he deserves to be pronounced correctly, but
it's not worth researching.
Yes, exactly. He is planning on directing Jessica Simpson as Samus in a Metroid film. Yes, I think that's the only thing we can say. Now, you love the Metroid games, right?
The Metroid games are my favorite series of all time. Like, pretty much, I'm a 2D gamer, but pretty much convinced me to even go into 3D was just the Metroid games alone, and I just don't see how this could work as a film in general. It's going to be difficult to do, and much less with the, you know, illustrious talent such as Uwebo and Jessica Simpson. Sounds like it's, as the thing says, a recipe for disaster.
Exactly. I mean, there's nothing more to this story, but, like, just the idea itself, just those three names together. I mean, Metroid by itself, I'd be like, oh, okay, let's see who's doing it. But John Woo
had the rights to it for a while. I don't know when that changed, and hopefully maybe that'll reveal this to be fake, hopefully. Yeah. But if you want to see a great Metroid film, go watch Alien.
Yes, there you go.
Because that's essentially, Metroid was essentially a game adaptation of Alien, you know, just without the rights, and they changed a few things. I mean, unofficially, nobody's ever been able to prove that, but
right, it's
pretty coincidental.
Yes. Now let's get to two more positive video game adaptations.
Okay.
Now first, let's start with kind of the smaller one. Deus Ex, the Square Enix series, is kind of this, it's been around for a while, because I remember playing the first game when I was younger, but there's a third one with the subtitle, like, Human Revolution, and it's coming out early 2011, and it's kind of this world that's kind of reminiscent of Blade Runner and RoboCop, set in 2027, and I guess the game trailer for it came out recently, and Hollywood, Heat Vision blog from THR, they report that Hollywood has been a-buzzing this week about getting...
A-buzzing
about possibly adapting in this, kind of a huge blockbuster.
I actually don't know anything about this game. I've never heard of it, but I'm looking at this screenshot, and I have one fear for this movie.
Yes.
Keanu Reeves.
Oh, God. Actually, yeah, he is very reminiscent. If you look on our site, he is very reminiscent, the main character of Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, go look at the screenshot on the website. It looks just like him. I mean, Keanu was probably getting a little too old for this role, but... You know, you never know.
Yeah. I mean, there's a 3-minute trailer that was premiered, and it does have a cool style. I mean, the world is very, I mean, it literally looks like an updated version of Blade Runner. But, I mean, what sci-fi, I mean, almost every sci-fi.
Well, hey, then Harrison Ford could just play this role, because apparently he's not too old for anything.
Exactly. And kind of like this whole idea, like, there's a company that turns on, you know, the people that are working for them, and citizens and stuff. So it's kind of like a standard, it seems like a standard kind of conspiracy thriller.
Yeah,
the government.
That plot works all the time when they do it, so it could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, but we'll keep you updated on that as well. Now, our last video game adaptation, which I'm kind of most excited for, is Mortal Kombat. Now, I've actually only seen bits and pieces of the original, and I played the game, and they're fun, but there's never really been a kind of a serious movie on this, and now there's rumors that the stunt choreographer, who was he did a lot of big-name films for WB, Larnell Stovall, is putting a project together, and he kind of shot this 7-minute short film, you know, to kind of hype people up for it. And Michael Jai White is in this, who is in Black Dynamite, great movie. And it just kind of has this, like, really serious look, kind of, like, really slick, really, you know, slick.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not as cartoonish and kind of ridiculous as the first two. I believe Paul W.S. Anderson, the greatest director alive, I believe, had a hand in those. But I'm also interested, Jeri Ryan from, now she was on one of the Star Trek shows as well. That's kind of an interesting choice for, do you think she's going to be carried over into the feature film? I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's, I mean, literally this clip was released online and no one knows anything about it. And it just appeared. It kind of was like a promo reel, I guess. And it just features kind of some action scenes, not much of a story. And, I mean, it has a really cool style. And it feels like just something they could have shot, you know, just, you know, to be, kind of get people excited and possibly get buyers involved. But, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, a film.
Like, yeah, I mean, this sort of thing happens... It happened a lot more in the 90s, especially with more independent films doing short film versions to get the full financing for the feature film. But it's kind of interesting now in this day and age where we're getting to see these way before they happen. Mm. So it's interesting to see where this might lead into a film.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, well, we'll keep you updated on all those video game adaptations, especially the most recent one. I'm sure, I mean, after the buzz this week, that kind of stirred up, that we'll get some news on what...
All video game news all the time.
Yes, yes. All right, well, let's move on to our feature reviews. Now, first, I saw Get Into the Greek, John missed out.
Yeah, how was that?
Yes, yeah, so Get Into the Greek. Now, this is Nicholas Stoller, who did Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Now, this is his... It's a spinoff, but... Russell Brand's character is the only character that's really carried over. There's like a little 5-second hint. He sees a commercial of... Have you seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Yes.
Yeah, so he sees a commercial of Kristen Bell in her new show. It's called Blind Medicine. You know how they kind of made fun of, like... So there's like this episode with her... The promo is her walking down the hallway with the cane. And he's like, oh, I think I had sex with that chick once or something. Oh. And it's stupid, but whatever.
Well, you were also kind of intrigued by the paradox of Jonah Hill character.
You know, Jonah Hill in the first movie plays this kind of waiter that's obsessed with Aldous Snow, who is obviously the rocker, played by Russell Brand. And in this movie, he is also obsessed with him, not to the same extent, but he's just a massive fan. Doesn't have that obsessive nature as the first one, but, and he plays a kind of an assistant at a record store, which is run by, a record company, which is run by, Sean, P. Diddy Combs, and,
I still like to call him Puff Daddy. I know he doesn't like that.
Yeah, but. He gets mad. And no, they make no mention whatsoever in the entire film of these two characters, so, I mean, if you're one to nitpick, I guess it would make you upset, but I thought this film was a complete mess. But I did not hate it. I thought it was hilarious. It's one of those movies where you just kind of roll with it, and there's enough comedy there to keep you interested the whole time. Some people were comparing it to kind of The Hangover and kind of this summer's Hangover, even though it's even funnier. And no.
Oh, you think this... Oh, wait, no. They were saying...
I do not agree. I think there's a lot of dead jokes in it, and some of the first kind of... What's Forgetting Sarah Marshall did so well was kind of... Right from the beginning, it kind of introduced this character, and you felt Jason Segel's kind of heartache, and even if it was done in a hilarious way, you felt really bad for the guy, like he was really depressed. And in this movie, they hint at a similar kind of emotional storyline, and then they don't really, then they try to pick it up throughout the movie, and at the end, it's like 30 minutes of that emotional storyline playing out, and it's like, alright, I don't buy this, and I mean, but they also mix humor in the whole time, so that kind of makes it work, but I don't know, there is some, like, really odd, I mean, this whole movie the plot is literally, Aldous Snow, he released this, he was a massive rock star, he released this album, and with kind of pressure from the studios, called African Child, and it was the most racially insensitive album of all time. Rolling Stone ranked it as, like, the third most detrimental thing to black culture, and, like, all this stuff. And so it's kind of this funny opening, which, by the way, if you don't ever open, I guess for a movie that this is okay, but this movie opens with 5 minutes of kind of, like, social media-esque, like, TV interviews and, like, YouTube
things. 5 minutes?
Yeah, almost more than 5 minutes, I would say. Just interviews and, like, kind of catching up all on, like, Aldous Snow's character and stuff. And it just comes off as so, like, kind of forced and, like, not very funny. Like, there's a few funny moments.
I don't feel like we really needed to be caught up with him so much. I mean, yes, I know he's from the previous movie, but, like, honestly, until, like, you kept mentioning it, I never really even associated the fact that this was kind of a spinoff, because, yeah. I mean, I guess maybe it's because Russell Brand kind of just plays himself, yeah. So...
I mean, almost everyone I talked to had no idea, so I don't know if, like, I don't know, so he released this album, and then he went into kind of this drug-induced haze for, like, 10 years, and, like, and then the record labels... Obviously, they were saying how music has been, you know, like, declining, music industry, and they need some big ideas. So, like, Jonah Hill's character kind of presents this idea of having this reunion concert for Russell Brand at the Greek Theater in L.A., kind of a 10-year anniversary since his most famous live album, which he recorded there earlier, 10 right. years before. And so the whole movie is Jonah Hill going to London, getting him, bringing him back, trying to get to the Greek Theater. And it has this very, like Frankie Sir Marshall, this very kind of, like, classical, like, Hollywood. Like, there was nothing, no crazy editing, like, nothing. Right. Like, very just classic, like, any kind of Apatow film, you know? Mm-hmm. And this movie does some, like, crazy stuff, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It has, like, some, like, really, really quick montages of things they're doing, and, like, there's a couple scenes where there's one scene where Jonah Hill, they get, like, completely wasted, and there's, like, this, like, 10-second, or, like, 10-shot, like, cut of, like all the events that went on, and, mm-hmm. like, the last shot is him, boom, falling down in his bed, kind of, like, it's really, like, and it's kind of jarring at first, but it works for the movie. The whole movie's kind of, like, this messy, everything's kind of off-kilter. One of the funniest jokes, I guess if you don't want to be spoiled, don't watch it, but it's kind of in the trailer, too. One of the funniest edited sequences is towards the end, Jonah Hill has to go get heroin for Russell Brand, and in a surprisingly emotional scene, Russell Brand kind of, like, flips out on him, and I guess they were trying to, like, kind of portray, like, a rock star's life, and, like, it actually kind of worked well, like, he gets, like, literally angry and, like, screams at him and stuff, and it worked, I wasn't expecting it, so it kind of worked pretty well, and anyway, so Jonah Hill has to go get heroin for him, and so he goes to a hotel and asks this, like, desk clerk for heroin, who's played by the guy from She's Out of My League, and he's HUD in Jason Fogel. He's HUD in Cloverfield. And anyway, so they in this like quick like four, it's like four shots strung together of him going to his house to get heroin. Some guy comes in and fights and like says they want to fight. The next shot cuts to him already being stabbed on the way to the hospital. Then the next shot to that is Jonah Hill throwing him down by the hospital, and the next shot is Jonah Hill in his car running away. So it's like kind of it's like really quick. You're like, whoa, what's going on? And yeah. I mean, it's funny. I mean, for the shock value, I guess it's funny. Mm. And there, I mean, there's edited scenes like that than the ones I talked about earlier, which kind of it just makes this kind of movie like kind of like a mess. And then there's this side story with Rose Byrne plays Jackie Q, which is like his former lover, and they have a child together. And yeah, and I mean, it's handled all right. I wouldn't say it's like the best thing ever, but I mean, Rose Byrne is awesome. I don't know how you could go wrong.
So. You think Rose Byrne is awesome?
Yeah.
See, I love Damages, but, like, I don't...
I haven't seen Damages. Sunshine, and she was actually pretty good in Adam.
See, I think I love that we kind of know her from very different things.
Okay.
So, I mean, not to spoil it completely, yes. But do they get him to the Greek?
Yes.
Does it revitalize the music industry?
I don't know. They end before, so...
Do they end... Oh, man, it would have been so great. Do they end it with 1, 2, 3, 4, end? Because that would be kind of funny.
I was actually hoping they were really going to do that.
Oh.
But no, they kind of show.
So you have to hear, like, the horrible, like, fake rock music that they use?
No, well, what's funny about this movie is they use a couple songs from Frankie Sir Marshall, but then they have all new songs for his band.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of, like, these joke, like, no, funny okay. songs. So, like one's called The Clap, and it's about, like,
right.
STDs and, like... And so, yeah. I mean, I don't know, Jonah Hill's funny in it. A lot of people seem to hate on Jonah Hill, but I think he's continuously been funny in most of his work. I don't know why
they just don't like him because he's fat.
I think that could be why. I really... Because
we only like fat male comedians if they dress up like women. Exactly. That's the only time they're allowed to be funny.
And, I mean, there's a bunch of cameos. It's a really enjoyable movie.
So would you consider Russell Brand part of, like, the Apatow-verse now? It's like, is he part of that, like, troupe of actors? Do you think he could be brought in for another one? Or
he could be, but, I mean, after two movies of playing the exact same character, I feel like... I guess he could play something else, but it'd just be kind of odd. I don't know, like, it's...
Yeah.
But again, in those Apatow movies, everyone kind of plays the same character, you know?
Yeah.
So it could work. I mean, I had a fun time with this movie. I'd probably give it, like, actually, like, a 7 out of 10, because I don't know, on rewatch, you know, if I'd rewatch it a lot, like all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of a complete mess. Like, I don't know. Like, The Hangover did some things, not to keep comparing it, but that was like the biggest comedy of last year. But like,
right.
it did some cool. Like, I really liked the opening of that film. And there's not like this movie doesn't have very much style to it, I would say.
It doesn't look like it has a lot of style from the trailers. That's one of the reasons I didn't really seek out to go see it.
I mean, the one thing it does different in terms of style is the kind of editing it does, and that itself is kind of jarring. And then there's a whole, you know. As I said, the opening 5 minutes of all, like, the TV stuff, and, like, that's a whole reoccurring theme of, like, you know, the buzz around all the snow and stuff, and I don't know. It's okay. It felt, like, kind of like Borat or Bruno, I mean, like a big joke, but, like, not to that extreme, but,
Right.
But, yeah, no, I would definitely see it, you know, one of the best comedies out now. You'll have a good time the one time you see it, and that's... And if you like Sean Combs, or Puff Daddy, or P. Diddy, however you want to say, is pretty funny in this movie. He actually has a lot more to do than I thought. And
I actually liked his presence in the trailer. He did seem kind of interesting.
Soon after that scene, actually, in the trailer, there's a scene with just him and Jonah Hill, and it keeps, there's this like dialogue scene that just goes on and on, mm-hmm. and it just gets more ridiculous. And I thought he did a good job with that, and he comes back later in the movie and does a good job as well. So, no, I would recommend this, definitely. Now let's go to the next one.
God, do we have to?
Yes. Now, Splice.
Good old Splicing.
Yes. This movie, thank God, bombed.
Thank goodness.
Take that, Canada. Yeah, I came in, like, 8th place.
Wow, see, I didn't know it bombed that bad.
Yes. And, so this is Vincenzo Natali. He did Cube, which I enjoyed. I actually don't remember much of it. Have you seen Cube?
No, I have not seen that one.
It's a really cool premise, and definitely more of an indie film than Splice, which was actually shot in the US and Canada.
Yeah. Yes.
And so this movie was done like a year ago. It was supposed to have a fall release, limited, and then Joe Silver, one of his assistants, saw it at Sundance,
mm-hmm.
and then he picked it up and got this wide release.
Yay!
Yes, it stars Adrian Brody and Sarah Polley, and it kind of the basic story is that they are scientists and they've created these two organisms, Fred and Ginger,
mm-hmm.
and now they're planning, and they're kind of just these doesn't really have a character. Yeah, they're just kind of like basic to harvest kind of for things.
But they're not the fun kind of genetic engineers like Marlon Brando in The Island of Dr. Moreau, where they're just batshit crazy and making whatever they want. They're the kind of more boring ones.
Yeah, exactly. And they make this this creature.
Illegally. Dren. Illegally make this creature.
Dren.
Splicing human DNA with animal DNA is what they're not supposed to do.
And then shit literally goes insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what'd you think of Splice, John?
I really hated it. I haven't seen everything this year, but so far I think it's probably the worst movie I've seen all year. It's just one of those movies that is kind of mean-spirited and just not fun in any way to watch. Like, and it's not, like, you know, like, movies can be, like, gruesome, shocking, and all of these things, and still be fun and watchable, but this one's just, you know, it put me in a bad mood kind of right from the beginning, just the way they handled things. And, you know, it really tries to raise all of these important issues, or issues they think are really important, but it handles them all so superficially that... Why even bring them up? I mean, like, you have this whole issue of, you know, human engineering, and it's like, but they don't even really tackle it in any way. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah, I thought the build up was pretty good. There's the kind of when the movie turns is when this creature is kind of, they jump forward like a few days, and you see the creature just kind of progresses,
mm-hmm.
in age, and then it just gets really weird, and not in a way that I was interested in it, and not even in a way that I was like so shocked that it was getting weird.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like this really like a laughable kind of like and I don't know if that's what they were going for.
What moment were you thinking of?
The moment that I kind of the movie turned for me was the moment when she's in bed and they like lay her down. You see her immediately get older, and then like from that, not that moment specifically was the moment that turned for me, but then kind of everything after that, they just kind of did a lot of things wrong that I wouldn't have not expected so much, but just things that would have made the movie better. Like
the point of no return for me really was the drowning scene. Now,
yes,
I actually kind of hate children, But even my cold, black heart was really unsettled and just kind of disgusted at the way they handled it.
Well, for spoilers, I guess, coming up for it.
Well, I'm not really... I just,
let's go for it, because I want to talk about it.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, the Adrian Brody, who has been resistant to the entire project the whole way, like, you know, and Sarah Polley is, like, being, like, relentlessly, like, let's push it forward. Let's see where it goes. Let's see where it goes. Like, everything gets worse and worse and worse, and she's like, but let's see where it goes. You know, it's like... It was so bad at some point, like, they even have to eventually reference the fact that they're stupid, even though they're genetic engineers, like, when they can't figure out how to solve a fever. But, yeah, so there's a point where she has a fever, and they put her in this tub of water, and Adrian Brody snaps and drowns her. And, you know, he's trying to kill her, and there's this ridiculous line afterwards where Sarah Polley has a, like, is completely oblivious, and she's like, how'd you know, you know, she had gills? And he totally, like, is like, oh, yeah. You know, like
it felt something like from a Gruber, like where he's like, I didn't know you had a shield.
The bulletproof vest. But that shot of her like lifeless body just sitting at the bottom of the tank, like I said, I don't even like children, and that just revolted me in every way. And it just does so many ugly, vile things, and they're not interesting.
Like, yeah, like I was gonna, like I compare this movie to Old Boy, like that has like this kind of crazy. This movie doesn't. I wouldn't say it's a twist. There's just like a series of kind of surprising moments
that all come a mile away.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was another problem for me. Yeah. Like, who didn't see every little twist they had?
I know.
Yeah.
And I mean, the end of Old Boy is shocking, and you're like, wow, this is so interesting. I'm so interested in this. I'm kind of like wrapped up in like this whole story. There's a great job at building it. And this movie, all the shocking things happen, and I so didn't care about anything that I was just kind of like, oh, all right. And then it's kind of this movie where like everyone, everything I've heard about it is people, you know, that have seen it and have been like, oh man, you got to see this. It was just so crazy. And I feel like that's just the kind of movie it is, and I don't know why it's getting such high praise.
Yeah, I don't really understand it either, because, I mean, I could maybe go along, I could maybe understand it to a certain point, but the ending is just kind of textbook, you know, middle of the road, you know, sci-fi horror thriller, like, you know, which it's not well done in any way, and like I said, the major twist, which I won't reveal that one, but if you don't figure it out halfway through the movie, you're really not paying attention. But, you know, even that just doesn't work. And I made a joke at the end of the film that wouldn't it be great if this was a prequel to Jeepers Creepers, which once you see the movie, you will understand that joke, hopefully, unless it's just a bad joke.
Yeah, and by far, the coolest moment of probably the entire movie for me was there's this scene when Adrian Brody is on his computer, and he kind of has these cameras set up for the creature, and he looks, and he kind of can't find the creature with the cameras, and he looks, and the creature kind of in this tub, this or pool that he set up for him, and then it literally looks right back at him, and then they like touch. He puts his hand to the screen, and she touches him, and like it's this moment where it's like, whoa, like what just happened? It's crazy. And then they literally don't follow that up the entire film.
Well, it depends on how you think about them, how they really followed it up.
But
yeah, that was one that of the kind only of kind
supernatural
of well done,
element.
Yeah, that was one of the only very well done scenes in the whole movie.
And I mean, there are funny scenes, like the scene with kind of the conclusion of Fred and Ginger's characters. That was funny, but it
was
so
like,
stupid.
I was laughing because it was straight up like Gallagher.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, and you know, that kind of gives it away, but I'm really trying to not reveal anything too much. I'll allude to things, but I'm not going to completely spoil what happens. Completely like campy, ridiculous. And our audience was laughing hysterically throughout it, and you know, the big, like, the most shocking scene in the movie, which I definitely don't really want to say what it is, you know, got the most like uproarious laughter, and like,
oh yeah,
it just made people, it didn't really make people uncomfortable like I think they thought it was. I think people just saw through it right away and just found it to be ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the whole movie just kind of feels like a joke, like, and not even a funny one, like,
it's not bad enough to be a funny, like, bad movie, which is unfortunate. But I have talked to some people that all love that infamous scene. Well, infamous in like quotation marks, because it wants to be infamous, but I don't think it will be. And that's a very similar scene is handled so much better in the Masters of Horror series, it was a TV series on Showtime where all these great, like, kind of has-been horror directors who can't get work anymore would direct, like, an hour-long little film. And the Dario Argento film from the first season does something very similar to that scene, and it does it amazingly, like, way more impressive the way they handled it.
The whole time I was watching this movie, and even coming out of it, I felt like, oh, I've seen this movie before, even though it went to places I didn't really that was kind of, you know, not standard for a Hollywood movie, could you say? But, like I mean, Cronenberg, like, that movie, like, yeah. He definitely, like, pulls something there. But I was watching, like, a movie like Naked Lunch or, like, even The Fly or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, with The Fly, I think, has a lot of similar aspects to this one. And, but those movies just, they put you in the universe, like, so much better. Like, I just feel like, and the characters are so much more thought out. Like, people said this movie was well acted. Like,
what?
Like, I thought I really, like, Adrian Brody, like, I normally like him. I'm normally an Adrian Brody defender.
Yeah.
And he had a few good things, but, like,
actors can only be as good as their dialogue, and there was some wretched dialogue in this
film. And aside from the main characters, I think it's probably the worst supporting cast.
Terrible supporting cast. And that's pretty common, actually, for these sort of Canadian films. Mm-hmm. Like, it made there because they don't put, like, you know, like, and if it was made in America, you would have had somewhat notable people in the role of the brother and the executive
exactly.
and their boss. Like, but with Canada, they just throw these nobodies, and I hope I'm not offending any fans of these actors, if they have any, but, you know, they put these nobodies in these roles, and it's really kind of terrible. Like, the brother was awful, and...
The brother has, is it spoiler to say, something happens to him at the end,
yeah.
And the build-up to, like, throughout the whole movie is so terrible. Like, the one scene that they have, there's a scene where the brother comes in and tells Adrian Brody, you probably shouldn't be doing this, and it lasts for, like, it's like a minute-long scene, and it's just everything you've heard before, like, dialogue-wise, like, there's nothing, it's everything that Sarah Polley's already been telling us the whole movie, which she keeps telling us, and then, you know, and it's just like, ugh.
The movie, it brings nothing new to the table in any way. I mean, we've seen, you know, we've seen sexy she-creatures before in Species. We've seen, you know, genetic engineering before. The creature in the beginning is very reminiscent of a lot of the scenes in Alien.
Yes, completely.
You know, this, and, like, the whole monstrous feminine thing about, you know, this, like, idea of, like, evil reproduction and things like that that, you know, get tied to, like, femininity and the womb and things like that, and, like, you know, the things the women characters in this film have to go through is just, you know, like, the what I call the crucifixion scene was, like, another moment that I couldn't take it anymore. Like, I didn't even find the character all that sympathetic, but it was just so ugly the way they handled this film that, like, and maybe that's the point, maybe that's what I'm missing, but, yeah. Very ugly, unwatchable, terrible film.
And
by no means a 9 out of 10.
Jack drew it. No, Jack can't defend himself, so we won't yell.
Yeah.
We won't make fun of him. But, I cannot believe this movie has a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's not, I mean, there has been worse movies this year. A few, probably like 5 to 10 worse movies. But because there are good scenes in this movie. But they're very few and very kind of spread out, and it's kind of all, you know, bunched up in the middle of the movie. And I guess if you like a movie to be so ridiculous and laughable and just stupid, I guess you could watch this movie. But then there's so many movies out there that do it so much better that I would say no. But
this movie will lose nothing watching it on DVD. So if you must, wait for DVD, rent it for $1 on Redbox, or use the coupon code so that you have to pay nothing to watch it. But really,
or watch the won't be infamous scene on YouTube later.
Or just watch it on TNT in 3 years and let it get back to us and let us know what you think.
Well, that'll all be edited out. HBO.
Yeah, but I mean, the only thing that separates this from, you know, a terrible sci-fi original movie is, like, a couple $1 million and 2 mildly notable names.
Yeah, I was just kind of shocked that this was not a straight-to-TV movie the whole time I was watching it. And not even because of the production value, it's just just everything about it. It's just a huge misfire.
Yeah. Now I'm in a bad mood again.
Just I know. We gotta watch the movie. Alright. Well, avoid Splice. Alright, so that wraps up the Film Stage podcast. We'll be back, hopefully next week, to talk about The Karate Kid, which I saw, and I'll give you kind of a mini preview. I thought it was the first summer blockbuster that is actually delivered.
Wow. Yes. Okay, I'm interested.
Yeah.
The summer's turning out to be very interesting.
Yes. I mean, every weekend has just been, like, disappointment after disappointment. And this Karate Kid, just a quick mini review. People talk about Prince of Persia and Iron Man 2 and stuff being so overcomplicated with stories and stuff. And with the story, and then all these CG effects that just add nothing and makes you feel nothing about this story. And this, I was really, it was like a breath of fresh air with the Karate Kid because it's just kind of a very simple story. It's the same structure as the first one, but amazing production values, and Jackie Chan's great, and no CG. Well, I mean, obviously, touches of CG, but not, you know.
Really?
Okay. Well, I mean, every movie kind of has CG now.
That's
not,
true.
Not fucking sand, not CG sand like in Prince of Persia. Okay. So, no, I would absolutely recommend seeing The Karate Kid.
And speaking of recommendations, it's been out for a while now in New York and L.A., but it's starting to trickle out across the nation. If you want to look up my review for Mother and Child, the new Rodrigo Garcia film, definitely seek it out. Those types of movies are my favorite part of the summer, these kind of movies that fall through the cracks, and for some reason they decide to release and put them up against blockbusters when they're never going to find an audience. But, you know, you'll probably see it in a couple of years on TV eventually. But it was really great, strong performance from Naomi Watts and Annette Bening and Kerry Washington. Nice. Definitely seek it out if it's near you.
And if we're going to do this, I'm going to continue recommending The Secret in Their Eyes. By far the best movie I've seen in probably 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's just fantastic. Every part about it. So I'd recommend that. And Nicholas Winding Refn's Valhalla Rising is, I think it's on IFC On Demand and also IFC. Pretty solid movie. I didn't like it as much as Bronson, his last movie, which I absolutely love.
Yeah, I love that too.
And then also a film I saw, and I actually got quoted for in a newspaper, Perrier. Thank you. Perrier's Bounty. Ian Fitzgibbon's kind of Scottish In Bruges-esque film. Cillian Murphy and Brendan Gleeson and Jim Broadbent. And yeah, it's a really, really fun adventure movie. So check that out. Yeah, and we'll be back next week with Karate Kid and hopefully the A-Team reviews.
Oh, the A-Team.
Yeah, and you can follow all of our stuff on the Film Stage. And please send any questions you would like to editors at the Film Stage. We will answer them on here. If you have any movies you'd like us to watch and kind of talk about, we'll do that as well. But other than that, thank you and have a good night.